Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Mathematics Simplified, a review. So as happens, I read halfway through a book, and at various points do a review, or assemble thoughts as they come together, which sort of helps in, I suppose, the reader and myself understand as things come forward. So the last sort of review, so I actually did two reviews of Platypus as I was reading down the history of a platypus. And I can't quite remember what the review topics were, so this is part of the overall brain training to get your thoughts together and get it more structured. Now, as I'm obviously reading a number of textbooks reading through, there's some sort of light textbooks which sort of rehash the general flavour of ideas ready for the next consumer. They don't raise any sort of worries. They're broad scope, and they generally rehash accepted facts, and as such, on that rehash, you can get some sort of pretty crazy ideas being pulled in or going out. And I'm just thinking that I've just done a book called The Children's Encyclopedia of the Earth. And it's sort of that particular one compared to Maths Simplified. So if you compare it, had sort of a concept of what interests children. So they talked about dinosaurs, fluffy animals, events, disasters, things that you can tick off which would get children's interest. In the process, they gathered scientific facts, some complex, some unusual, brought them together as a general tick off, and in the mix was pulled in some misconceptions which came across. Of course, I'm really focused on misconceptions because this is where, as an expert, scientific expert, you study your science, go into the research lab, you find things out, you come back, and what's been going on is misconceptions. So you discover these misconceptions. So sort of like a very fundamental misconception is that the mantle of the Earth is undergoing convection. That's now no longer seen. And I don't know this except by doing extensive reading. So there's two aspects of it, that the actual production of stuff is from surface reading, and the experts involved don't have the in-depth reading, and very much so is what you get is a series of picture frames of surface reading where the information gets surface reading from one generation to the next, one book to the next, of surface reading where the person in there is very surface reading, and there's an inability to change the information as new ideas come up or new themes come up. And so really we're like looking at a civilization which is living in a 1960s theme park coming across now. There are actually books, an increasingly large number of books, which are actually unreadable. Not unreadable, but they can't actually be podcasts because they are so poorly constructed or so thick with the problems that you can only go basically half a page before commenting on them or counseling the reader say, well, don't listen to this. And one was by the Harvard Business Review, in which called Mindfulness. Hello. Called Mindfulness. And this just person walking past me. Poor thing. Mindfulness. And this was any point that they wanted to make to support them said, they said they themselves had done research and the research had shown. And then they described the experiment, and it was just completely pop science. the entire way through. So, the Zadok string, but unfortunately, also included in that area of really pop science, very lightweight, ill-constructed ideas, is actually government policy. The government, I've done a podcast of Sports 2030, and that is appalling. It's appallingly mixed up documents. So this sort of low quality stuff is the sort of stuff that gets pumped into schools, or into the school knowledge, and I think people very much agree with me would be the Swedish statistician Hans Roland Orlick, not quite sure what it is, the Ignorance Institute, and seeing how the institutions actually are supported by stable flow recycling of incorrect information. But I'd say that it's even further than this. There's that orbit, there's an orbit of even worse information going in government policy and sort of like folk science, which is more disturbing, because to support it, you have to really support this really poor science. You have to be really aggressive. If someone asks you a question, well, can you explain A and B, where A and B are obviously contradictory, you've got to brush that off. You can't possibly stop. It's sort of like trying to have a boat with holes in it and using the Venturi effect to make sure the water doesn't rush up. You have to keep the boat moving or it will sink as it starts to take on factual information. So there's this structure. So reading across, you read this book from the 1920s, which my grandfather wrote, and it is interesting because you can, you know, a bit of the history, the family history, and you know how that book interrelated with society and what people wrote and the people it influenced, and you sort of can see forward. So all of these books are winding up in church fates or published as big documents, saying, well, that's a nice glossy document, and not look through, or turning up in the curriculum, like I read the final year physics syllabus, and again, that was very, very poorly written, i.e. sections just repeated itself, or they had codes, and then you looked for where the code was actually implemented, so it's great fanfare of, say, Aboriginal inclusion, or symbols for Aboriginal inclusion, but no one item in there had the Aboriginal hand on it. And so, for the person, it just required thorough reading, and you'd pick up these points, self-consistent points. So you're going across here, and so this document is profoundly different from anything else I've read. Okay, it is limited because it's from a point of history, but it's incredibly advanced in as much of the psychology. It's not discussing feeding the students sugar-coated concepts, but more understanding the psychology of the child. And this is in 1921, and modern books that you pick up have missed this point. Then in terms of mathematical system, it's solving problems with the solution available. Obviously all the solutions aren't there, but there is this construct of what would you like say, basically a online game. It's wooden blocks, but they've been converted into an online, basically, website structure. It's a pretty amazing thing. So there's the teacher's demonstration, the children's demonstration, but it's much more subtle than this in terms of the major theme with an online game is that you've got to addict the child to it and keep their dependence. But this is involved in the student experience here. So we'll go off to talk about Maths Simplified So it's a very intensely interesting concept. So let's talk about what Mathematics Simplified is. It's a 1921 book. I suppose this is the 1930 edition of it. And it's a practical primer guide for teachers throughout school to use a resource, which you could say is equivalent to a website or Mathletics, but it's a resource. And this resource combines insight into student differentiation. So they've got the weak and the strong students and how you can accommodate them. In this amazing way, by giving a handicap or increased difficulty to allow interaction of the students, whereas previously the idea of differentiation is to differentiate the task, and it's rather than differentiate the concept of the task to allow level interaction. This is a profound insight which I haven't seen before. So it's buried in there. Buried in there is a little bit of a story of maths and numbers. Now this is incredibly a detailed story, given the level of story that you read on a very professional tome, which is the Encyclopedia of Mathematics, Numbers, or Mathematical Concepts, or Philosophical Concepts, I'll get back, that I've also podcasted. So, well, one of the, I suppose, conditions is that it's written, and it's been lost, because simply because the clientele today don't sit down and read books from end to end and consider them. So in this case, I've read maths and a series of other textbooks. Sorry about the road noise from off to the side here. And that's a pretty interesting thing. So let's stop now and actually describe Hill's constructivist calendars and this little books, and then we'll go into it, because there's actually an incredible amount of detail in here which an astute reader will see now, and that is a bit in your face. The unastute populist reader who cruises websites, talks mainly about what they know, or rather than knowledge, and how their knowledge is valued. It's one of those things, like, you listen to them, rather than talking about knowledge, they talk about what they know, and they also talk about what their knowledge is. So let's move away from that, rather than convince you anything, I just give a basic description of Hill's constructed counters. So the box I have turns out to be, and I only found out by actually reading this book, the teacher's demonstration blocks. So the teacher's demonstration blocks, I've got a small version of it, because I don't think the teacher demonstration box ever has the 1,000 units. So the unit is an inch, which is 1 inch by 1 inch by 1 inch. Smaller block, 2.56 millimeters. Oh, sorry, 26 point something or other, 54 millimeters exactly. Because the inch imperial units have been locked to the metric units. At least the Americans have done that as the first step. So these are 1 inch blocks, and there's 100 of them, all red and white, all beautifully painted. And there's two half blocks. Two of the red blocks are half blocks, so they're little halves that you can work with. And then there are a unit of 10 blocks, which is 1 by 1 by 10 inches, and there's a paper on the outside, so it's sort of a red and white paper on the outside of that. And then there's a 100 block, which is 1 by 10 by 100. 1 by 10 by 10 inches, and that's stored in a little case, and it's been lovingly taken apart with the original 1920s piece of paper on the outside. And these were relatively common out there in the hundreds and thousands sprinkled throughout Australia, and eventually lost. I can remember one person saying the last time they saw it, they were in a country Catholic school, and they saw it, you could actually see under the teacher's stand in the back, they could see this Hill's constructive counters. So these had an existence up to the 30s, and then the Great Depression struck. There you go. At night, I don't know how these people live, making such noise in quiet Australia. So this, I'm actually walking down pretty much the main street of Glenbrook, and it's absolutely quiet as a mouse. If you're down another sort of road here, there might be a few cafes quietly bubbling away. There's people quietly playing tennis and things like that. But let's get back to it. So this is box here. And there were student sets, so you'd have a class set. Now, bear in mind that in the 20s, class sizes, we find out, were 70 to 60 students per class. They were huge, huge affairs, and one scratches your head to work out how this number of students fitted in your rooms, but they did. Now, the desks were actually slightly smaller, and I think the kids were actually slightly smaller as well. So this is how it worked back then. But the class size would be the same thing, but there would be 1,000 block, a 10 centimetre by 10 centimetre size volume block, hundreds blocks, and tens blocks, and so forth, down to little units. Pretty much the same size as cuisinaire rods. Now, in fact, cuisinaire rods came after in 56, so this is a full 30 years ahead. And it speaks something to the massive story that this was poo-pooed, slammed by Australian education, pushed aside. But the people who used it, some of them went on to do master's degrees, and if you look on the internet, there's occasional thesis written about these Hill's constructive counters. Now, what has been handed to me is a small book, and I'd say it's something, I think you'd call it B5 pamphlet book, and you open it up, and it's from 1930s, beautiful book, and go through, actually relatively well preserved, and what struck me was, when I read it, it was written with so personable and so much general enthusiasm, and it just had the tone that it said, oh, I'll keep this. And so I've kept this book for a long, long time and put it to the side. And I suppose I just scratched my head and have a thought of it. And it's only in this unusual stage where I've been disengaged from the treadmill of the system. I've had these heart operations and a bit of the cognitive stuff, and well, what's happened is that I've had no support whatsoever. Looking at for loopholes, we've got this teacher, he's a bit unusual, let's just not support him and let's hope the worst thing happens. And of course what's happened is that I've gone from a sort of cognitive focus state to, you've got to have to rehabilitate. You've got to get to a standard, not level, but way, way ahead, to actually survive the malevolent processes about the place. So what's happened is I've begun reading these things, and I've, read these absolute whack books. I'm picking them up. They're just whack book beyond whack books. And of course this is a real standout, reading it through. I generally say that because, it's got some clear, precise language to say, make maths a game, get their skin in the game, and make it like that. Now, it also has some things that is answering a problem that we would now solve with a calculator. We would present things in such a rapid way that a lot of the problems they're looking at were gone. But the actual, movement there is, it was answering a question of what maths do people need? And the idea is they need maths for commerce and industry, to work out how to make a profit, to stay in business, to evaluate the quality of things, and to actually be a citizen. So that's embedded in there in some of the examples. But it also has these beautiful, beautiful stories. They say, okay, what we're going to do, and this is the most intense, intense feeling. I read it and I just go, this is amazing. So they have, we're going to divide 60s by 20s. And what we're going to do is we're going to get the students to come up at a time, one at a time, line up here, and you take the first 20, you've got the first 10, oh, there's not enough for you. You sit down. And this very physical involvement is that they, it's just this idea of the concept is now put into the students and put across. It's actually brilliant, a brilliant concept. Now, that is to say, that it is brilliant in as much that we now have other ways of doing things. I'm actually sitting back and saying, what am I doing analyzing this? So there are brilliant things. The fraction stuff, not so much. And there is some stuff where you can actually see the maths has evolved over the time due to our experience. So if you actually look down on the book, point 125 is written 0.125 rather than 0.125 or 0.125. And the decimal points are midpoints rather than base points. So there are subtle movements in things subtle changes. Obviously, the English system, which was there, was, well, you can do it, but here's the metric system, it's better. This is absolutely crazy that this person was actually promoting metric and teaching metric. What? 50 years ahead of the game, all the psychology is just absolutely astounding. Yet there are these meta themes coming across, and there's also many different levels of maths that now exist in society. This complexity, complex maths, which exists. So I'm trying to actually place it in a situation that's available and actually look at how one would write a paper to it. Because at the moment, I'm looking at the intellectual outlets of what's going on. So the intellectual outlet at the moment, podcasts, press, put the dictaphone in, the computer, and the podcast is produced and sent out. And sometimes with quizzes, in this case I'm not doing with quizzes, and then when you put a set of podcasts out, at the end, a few buttons click, and it's put out into an app, to push through it. Now what I'm pulling back and saying, well, one of the things I want to do is an online quiz or multiple choice. Now, just bear with me for the moment. There's an online quiz and multiple choice, and of course I can achieve that, but to achieve it with low stress, I will just have the generic parts, and it will be stitched together and randomised. So I'll have a question, answer one, answer two, answer three, and I think I've basically got there. Now, it's a very similar set of problems that I've come up against with it, which is, say, getting cover art, which is a very similar type of problem. The lab view is there, but the lab view from 2000 does not, which I've got, the lab view from 2000 does not have the capacity to do what I want, which is voice recognition. It can't actually do it itself and actually listen to my voice and produce it. I've tried it out, and it's not for want to try it, so it's sort of like a base code at the bottom line of a signal file, a noise, a sound signal file, is limited to 8 bits and so many hertz. So no matter what file you shove at it, that's what it produces. Because it, obviously back in the day, when the LabVIEW version I have, didn't contemplate this next generation of stuff, and it would be a trivial thing to go ahead. But in a sense, it means that you stop. It's probably an hour of fooling around and come back. And so that's the multiple choice. What I also want to do is build the concept of the research paper. And the research paper, I'm looking at three dimensions. So this is obviously well worth writing a research paper about. But conceptually, it's hard to go to what angle you'll do it, because this is one point in one time, and the discovery of this is a particular methodology of discovery. So this is that aspect of the research paper. So I'm going to have the entry point to the research paper as an app button that everyone can actually see going across, which is sort of the front end of how things are written. But the concepts of the research paper, I'm beginning to put down in a app. This is structured questions and answers. Candidate all thoughts in this new level of mathematics behind the apps. Now, I've seen that there. So there's the front end, there's the other end of where I gather thoughts and resources together and interact and just can actually talk with people. Now, given this, it sort of all falls into it. There is this resistance to new ideas. And it's a very, very strong resistance, which is almost built into what I'm looking at. Because this, Hill's constructive counters, was a burst of new ideas which was hunted and squashed. So there's this beautiful stories coming up. So there's stories of the Catholics and the, what was it called, the Masons. They had a fight back in the 1930s, things that you wouldn't believe. Even back then, you could see my grandfather had relations with the Aboriginal people. I don't know whether he had any in his schools. I don't know how that operated, but he did have interactions with them and knew their understanding of number. So I don't know how that information comes into this little book. But not only that, there are other stories to see how that goes, and that was very crushed and turned off. And if you actually look at the overarching theme of Australia is this crush and turn off. If you actually look at the First Fleet, there's a romantic story, but there's also another story of crushing and turning off. So a lot of us say the very early explorations of the areas around Sydney was to demonstrate to these stupid Irish convicts that Australia was not worth going to. So what they did was they decided, they got some very ill-equipped convicts without proper shoes, and they got them to explore south to Picton area. This is from here, the southern basin, Campbelltown, stuff like that. It opened up all the sheep grazing land because it was away from the major rivers, which is the rivers which flow north from this region. The idea, this is before we crossed the Blue Mountains, the idea was to demonstrate that it wasn't worth doing. So if you read a lot of the theme there is this administration of crushing ideas. Now, the interesting thing is that this maths is critical, leading to my father's mathematics. So my father was a whiz kid at Sydney University, 17 years old, and involved in the first digital computing. So if you can imagine a teenager really not getting into the underlying politics of what's going on, just having fun and exploring what's going on while this politics swirled around. They had the first digital computer, and for a long time, that digital computer was keeping up with the rest of the world. This is Cyrac. And so a lot of the magical algorithms to do basic things like logarithms, square roots, fairly complex calculations, and even programming. And so my father is the origin of the first English language program. So it wasn't digital ones and zeros. You didn't have to go basically understand machine language in terms of, I suppose, what we'd say is hexadecimal. Close on that. He would actually convert that to English language, and that's the first program called Interprogram, and he's also the originator of computer music. But then again, you have the theme that there was infighting, and CSIRO closed its digital computer to crush it. But there was an understanding of that, and it was bought by Melbourne University, and Dad went with Melbourne University to it in the 50s, sat up there as their resident geek and the first computer science lecturer. So what we're getting through this is, or the thing that I'm getting through, is this recurrent, we're not Silicon Valley by any stretch of the matter. We're quite the opposite in terms of getting a good idea and absolutely poisoning it and loading it down. Yet, in the process of crushing it, there is something else which carries it forward. So you're reading this and you're saying, well, that carried through this very thin, fine line. So even though at the time it looked hopeless, it blossomed. And similarly with digital computer music, it was crushed. And what happened well after my father's death, academics came in and said, well, who did produce computer music? And people did some very serious things, unearthed the first computer music, the dates, the records and stuff like that, and then built the story that indeed this is true. So they had a big celebration of it. It just happens to be researchers at the right thing. This finest thread, and a very fine group of people, and one of the things is there's no central story or myth part of it, because this is part of conserving. So Australia has a very strong myth about the bringing of sheep over MacArthur and all this type of stuff, and it's the bad guys, the guys behind the Rom Rebellion, who get to write the long story. They get on the bank notes, they get to do these things. The other story gets diffused, and one of the valuable things of diffusing, there is no central telling of the story. It's broken into these beautiful threads, and you can pick it up. This is one of the things to come across. Now, in this age, it could be all desperation, but there's a deeper concept here of surviving in this sort of crushing drought environment, sort of intellectual drought environment. So at this stage, we're looking forward, and there's still these forces of crushing, and of course, the solution to this is the more advanced mathematics, please. So for me, it's more advanced to, when you rehabilitate, set everything to maximum, set computer programs to maximum to get you out of the corner and start to, sort of lump ideas together, read a series of books, put it together into paper. Now, the traditional problem is that I used to produce a fair number of research papers. Now, the important thing is that I wouldn't be able to publish them, so I still write them up, but because they'd be critical of the education department, I wasn't stupid. I didn't put a kill me button on it. But even then, some that were published, people, I would show them and they'd look away from the science magazine and say, put it away. Put it away from there. We have to really come up with something. So the theme here, so I can see a theme coming up here. I can see the Hill's constructive counters. And not saying it's fantastic, but for its time, it tried to achieve these goals, and it failed. So Hill's constructive counters, the Great Depression came along, it failed. And you could lament, but that's the story of it. Strangely enough, for no connected reasons, I've approached the problems in a certain different direction. So there's certain things I've done, sort of like the refraction cards, rather than saying my Hill's constructive counters can do everything, I'm not bound like this. Here have these square see-through pieces of paper, which are divided in half, is divided in half, a third divided in a third, and they're all linear ones. I developed these and showed them at a maths conference, a man's work conference in 2006 it was, and put them forward and people could see their work, and it has the ability that you can do complex mathematical fractions with these cards, do lowest common denominator, and it's proven with students that they do work. Now, the response was this is critical of the way we teach fractions at the moment. End of story. You're not a part of the system. End of story. Now, of course, it could be the end of story, like so many times, but this sort of gone underground. I'll bring it up again in this paper. Now, there's another thing. So that's one invention. The second invention is, and I had it, I do remember it very much, because I was afternoon tea, having coffee with my mum up at Springwood Cafe, and they had little table tent cards on them with the table, and I picked it up and I realized that you could invert it. You could, that's positive and that's negative. That allowed you to have negative numbers in a blocks on a number line. So I developed this up and again presented at a conference. People thought that was great. But again, it wasn't successful. So there are so many things to make something successful in Australia. That's really hard. You've got a very dispersed market, and the people who are in that dispersed market have not developed global relationships with people. So they're global consumers, and their importance as being a representative of a global market. So if they have robotics, the people who are actually in positions, not necessarily the most smart in robotics, and they have been subtly bought by the companies. Yeah, and I remember discussing sort of in depth, sort of more philosophical question. It was the Dice Master. So in Australia, there's lots of dice which are sold. And that's another example. So Wheel Decide is an example of it, and the software put towards this type of stuff. Now the Dice Master spoke to me and he said, "Look, I've got 6 ex-teachers. They're driving around in cars and they sit with people and they have one-to-one and they sell some dice like this and establish them as a long-term market." And that's how things go. You can't sell new ideas in Australia, he said to me. Great concept, I can see where it's going, but you can't sell it. And partly the manufacturing costs in Australia are too prohibitive. I get these cheap from China, right, and I just unpack them, I give them to my ladies and sell, and I make a tidy profit on it. There's really no other mechanism before it, and everyone is in the know, and it's structured. It's structured like that. And I went out one time in a car, and I drove out in this Mulgrave or somewhere like that in Victoria, and just went to this quiet little opportunity. No fuss, no bother. That's the way. It's sort of like a sheep grazing the area. So there's that. The actual deep concept of using a resource, this is another thing with that you're reading so far, is that the resource is only a support to help channel people in the direction that you want, in as much that there are certain habits which are bad. It's counting on your fingers and stuff like that. This is a counting thing that they get used to and it's taken away. It's amazing, amazing thought. So fingers, don't count with them because you've always got fingers. It's a bad habit. But if you use these counters, they can be used already, but they're not out today. You'll have to use your head or this differentiation. So getting back into it, there's this whole series group amount of information which can be harvested by analysis at each point in time and brought forward, but it's not a coherent linear story. So there's all these mathematical teaching things, and it's now the concept of maths for the people's future, and that's an unknown thing. At the start of the book is absolute, so is the math simplified is awful because it does factorization, sort of the highest level math. So you can well imagine that this is not done stupid and idly. It is in order to get past the first, it's a selling document, it's a product book, and this would be to get past the top maths people to make sure that that's ticked off. The top maths is ticked off there. So there's this product stuff of getting the various information for resources. And what I think it is important is that the model that we have nowadays of trying to make profit out of this doesn't make sense. Any product you have doesn't really make sense. Or the thing that if you sell something as a product, it's something that you want to sell in, dare I say, Toys R Us. That's all gone, but it's in big shelves, and it has sort of a sugary stuff, a sort of a toy feel to it, like a learning computer, and batteries, and I don't know, all this interconnection. And it's a toy, and it's plastic, and it's throwawayable. It's a consumable item. I don't think that is compatible with the subtle use of these blocks. You look at how blocks are described. I don't think our economic model actually supports it. I don't think it is economically supportable. What I do think is that it would be good to have a class set of these things, but in the crowded technology market, it's got to be similar to a web page, and somehow you've got to be able to go to another model where these can be ordered, delivered online, and basically rented. So these resources can be rented for a short time for a very reasonable subsidized fee and given to different people. And if they don't like it, they don't rent it. But if they are successful, they do rent it. And that builds a community where the upfront cost is reduced. The same goes for robotics and stuff like that. But the entire thing is that the resource is there, but it's not used. Now, the other thing is that with all these things, they have the problem of counting and support for them. Now, there is technology out there of RFI that's cheap enough to put in each individual block. This is just insane. I can't understand what this can do. But it's something that robotics and things can do. You could just put them in bags, pour them down an RFI reader, and it will tell you, look, you're missing three blocks. So the time overhead of counting the blocks, putting them back together, is enormously high. Now this being said, the actual overhead of controlling any of these physical assets. So physical assets are, one is that they're tactile, two, that they require a certain amount of time, and they're physically there, and not on a computer screen. There's sort of so much, and also that they allow cooperation, which is not normally available on computer screens. So there are all these aspects. There's all these solution technologies coming across. Surely we can hit across. And sort of going into there, there's a intellectual support of a paper which puts these together. And if this technology is not correct, for one, that you can actually build a series of resources which go in, and this simple series of solutions can be used. So you could have Cuisenaire rods, which I think are the dumbest thing I have ever seen, Cuisenaire rods, obviously. But Hills Constructors counters, there's a series of things that you could do. You could have the cards, the counting blocks, and what happens is that this same resource doesn't have the same fate of the Hills Constructor founders of hitting a recession, disappearing, and then being squirreled away as a resource and winding underneath some sort of country schools, on the actual dirt floor in a country school, going out. So it's, there is this possibility that we can come together. Now, there's a whole lot of resources and thinking. There's and the things, if you can think of this as an idea, it has to progress to a certain idea with a champion, a maths teaching champion, and have the commitment and structure. There is this actually charity startup funding which can be happening, so we can actually access it. So it is possible to build together, but there's no point building it until we've got the research papers, the engineering to come across to make it happen. So what I'm going to do is I'll continue podcasting, I'll build it up, I'll podcast, put this review in, and we've got the start of the sort of two ends of the research paper. One, the app, which lets you portal in to see the research paper being built, and two, the actual all things considered, the advanced mathematics using. What is truly, I'm really trying to work this out. It is actually a different field of mathematics. Truly speaking, it is a different field of mathematics. There's the sort of financial, counting, social interaction mathematics. You know, you go too far, you're in a school zone, in the wrong time, doing the wrong thing, bang, you get this number of dollars. It's that financial, social transaction mathematics. And then there's the other field of mathematics, which is these algebraic functions, add functions, which is wave functions, which is the mathematics of biology and science. And that one there is the people who's, you can't actually convert one to the other. People say, well, can you reduce that mathematics to dollars and cents? No, you can't do it. So quantum mechanics is really a field of mathematics, and it is like the joy of an art gallery. People can say, well, can you put it on a handbag and sell heaps of it? Maybe, maybe not. There's other aspects of it. It's the idea of the difference between a stand-up comedian who can actually draw people in and paying people and someone who's in a symphony orchestra. It requires different structures for it to work. This is to do as the mathematical analogues. But then again, you've got this yet another area of mathematics which structures thought. And what can I say? It seems to be it's hard to say. I was going to say goodbye to it all. Goodbye to the cruel world. I didn't actually feel sort of it was, well, it's no point wasting your time feeling that it was cruel. So I'm now back in here looking at it and looking at what resources that I can bring to bear to do it. So if I can actually pull together and use this to express and organize, actually draw resources together, and actually sort of build up to a thesis level and build back again to get a key pithy research paper out on this, I can actually produce it. And one of the great things about research papers is that they don't get workplace reviewed. You know, does this correspond with the outcomes, the sort of commercial outcomes of our workplace? Yeah, it can actually be, no it doesn't, but it's well structured, it's original, it's well supported, it's well written. Put it out there. It doesn't have to be, the great thing about research papers is that they don't have to actually support and validate. They can actually question the status quo. They don't have to validate the status quo. And I think this is a fundamental aspect that's actually built into the DNA of the Iglesias strain that I'm aware of, in that there's this questioning of do your actions validate something external, or are they actually quality within themselves? It's this really subtle thing about whether the actions produce something external which can be marketed, or whether the actions are authentic and are not by label, not by inference, not by awards, but are they fundamental to the values that we aspire to? And what are those values? Are those values concepts, or are they actual physical things that people do by action? I.e., you may talk about innovation, and believe in innovation and stand up and get applauded for innovation and get grants for innovation, but are you at the end of the day truly innovative? So, inaction, indeed. I'm sure there's some sort of Shakespeare and some sort of people have written about these types of things, but that's the key. That's a swap over from collection to a series of deeds, i.e. the actual, I suppose, systems. It really reminds me of research for a PhD, where you actually do the background study, you set up some systems to get going, and you build systems upon systems to ensure that you can actually get new research results. And then you convert your insight into deed or data. It's that process. And unless you're in it, if you actually don't, you have to really do it. You can talk about it and promote it. There is something different from the actual person who built the car as compared to a salesman. The salesman can talk about experiences and experiences other people have, experiences that you have, but there's nothing like actually building the car. And so in this case, we've reached this time. Now, talk about garishness. Just walking past this real estate agent, and the lights are just really bleached. That's awful. That's there. So I have to go this double link. One is, now what gets me is that no matter what rehab, firstly, the actual processes of actually getting professional assessment to me have been frustrated. Okay, I don't know what the game is there. But then I do work out, I have to do my own rehab, own work on it. And then whatever rehab I do, people say, why? There's a more professional way of doing that. Oh dear, you can see the beginning of the end for this intersection. Here there'll be cops here for sure to make sure it goes. There's this intersection which was defied the laws of road laws, defied the laws of having road laws, and required on courtesy to do it. And surprisingly, there's been no accidents here, but the government spent a good few million dollars changing this intersection. It's getting very close. It's been funded, of course, by fines and stuff like that. I was just saying, the rehab. So I decide, I'll have to podcast and be able to speak coherently for a long time. And then I'd say, my writing has to improve. I'll just get a page and just start copying it out. So it comes along and says, nice handwriting. But that's dreadful rehab. I'd be able to give you better rehab than that. Of course, yes, I'm trying. So I'll do that. And obviously, walking, I'll get back and do a bit of exercise, bike stuff. And I'll get there eventually. So, look, thanks a lot for listening. And this is a mid research review, so I'm just not a dreadful podcaster, but I'm someone who's out sitting back saying, she'll do, I'll pick that Brumby over there. And so it's really, if I can say, you've got the legendary American, every country has got their legendary horseman, but it's sort of having that sense of what horse has got the spirit, what horse is different. So there's a whole lot of show ponies about the place, and this one has got a Brumby. This is a bit of a, it's got a bit of character to it, and it can do something. So I do have the, as Omar, the mindless strategist, says, you have to have that strategic scenario. And I think I can build a shell upon shell of strategic scenarios and work efficiently. Doing here, I have to actually work efficiently against people or around people who are not fair dinkum. People who I had this beautiful sergeant. We call the real, the word we have is Real McCoy. He had this word, and I can't remember it, for someone who's, for things which are half-hearted. This one of the things that is a almost joy in the, or was a joy in the Australian Army, the actual laconic put-downs were just so fantastically funny and devastating. But there is this thing where you turn up and you do something, and there's this real hatred that if you don't put in this 100% effort, you know, you turn up and just waste everybody's time. And so there's a lot of this, that type of thing going on. I wish I could remember the words. I can see the screaming funny sergeants saying it. If you came up with your gear a pile of shit, that lets you know, and it wouldn't, they'd put you down, let you know, and let you get it into gear. But and so that's very much there. There's a lot of people who are turning up, and it's just a matter of, to quote a thing, gaining and maintaining the initiative. Thanks for listening as I get home from this podcast. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.